never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? In the words of an unnamed former OG New York housewife, we support other women. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormone changes our bodies go through. Perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. In the time before that time of the month, I don't feel like myself. I recognize a change in emotion after the fact, but during it, it's so difficult to understand what is different about the experience of being me that changes in a matter of days. The good news is we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore, because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. And the biggest benefit, feeling like myself again. That's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 30,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. It's Andy's girls. I assume this will be the most excruciating episode I will record until, God forbid, Shannon one day steps away from the franchise. Not a normal episode, although at this point, what episode of Andy's Girls can be considered normal? Didn't want to record it. Held off and held off and figured I can do this another day. So, my dad would be very mad if I didn't record, because of him. So, my dad died on Sunday. I'm handling it really well. I'm very fortunate in having gotten advance notice that this was going to happen. I've joked to, folks in the inner circle that, you know, what does my dad do for a living? Well, he's currently dying part-time. I guess the TLDR here on the death of my father started back in 2012 on Election Day when I, in a one-day round-trip bus ride to Rhode Island. Was I on the train? There's no way I could have afforded the train. Bus trip to Rhode Island to vote because I hadn't filled out absentee information on time or something. Kind of wild because also during that election cycle, I was leading weekly bus trips to campus in Pennsylvania for Obama's reelection campaign, but forgot to mail in mine on time or something. So I went back in a day to vote, and my dad said, I want us to go to a fancy coffee shop. And I was like, that's a red flag right there. Sat me down and said he had been diagnosed with prostate cancer, which I was terrified by at that point. You know, I think his PSA levels, which honestly, if you watched Real Housewives of New Jersey, you got a sort of sense of the journey of finding out whether or not a person's going to be diagnosed with prostate cancer, a la Margaret Josephs and her beloved husband, Joe. But at that point, I think his PSA levels, all things considered, were relatively low. And at some point, the cancer was not present. So I sort of, not that you can ever forget about something, but it seemed like it had gone away, resolved on its own. And we were like, all right, all moving forward, all systems go. But apparently it may have been lurking. And then in 2018, my dad was hit by a car. It's something that I've kept everything relating to his medical issues of other family members very private, because it wasn't my story to tell. And my dad is private to the point of, I don't even know what word to use. I don't think I could find one that would feel respectful of his memory, certainly this week. But it was not a position in which sharing anything that I was going through as a family member would have felt like a good idea. So 27, but I've referenced stuff, I think. 2017, he was hit by a car on his way to a bar association meeting in Providence. Not a bar of restaurants and bars. If only it was Sex Unique restaurant and lounge, but lawyer stuff. And while recovering in the hospital, where he very well could have died, did I say 2017, 2018? He had broken a bunch of shit and, oh, fuck, there was some kind of goddamn, I think, leak in his brain or something. I blocked all of this out of my memory because it was an incredibly difficult time. But while he was in the hospital, it turned out he was also, and with a brain injury, which is sort of the biggest part of this, aside from the cancer, he was diagnosed with cancer again, prostate cancer again. And, you know, we're so fortunate living in Rhode Island with close access to incredible hospitals in Boston. He was treated at Dana-Farber for the cancer, and my mom got him into, I just forgot the name of it, even though I obviously visited him, the like number one Harvard associated brain fucking place in Boston, which was, let me tell you what, if your hospital room is overlooking like boats on the harbor, I mean, there are worse places to be. Although obviously not having a brain injury, traumatic brain injury, is always advised. But because of the brain injury, my father, you know, thrice published author, always identified as a writer first and foremost, certainly his greatest passion. His worst nightmare genuinely would be referenced after his death as a lawyer. He was always a writer through and through, but decided not to. He had prostate surgery. They removed his prostate. How we've gone from me not publicly ever acknowledging that he has cancer to now being like, the doctors removed his prostate. So after that, there was hormonal therapy. I forget the name of anything. Just watch Grey's Anatomy and let me know what happens. You know, advice that he should do hormonal treatment, which he refused to do because it would have potentially impacted his brain recovery. And for him, his number one thing was, you know, I might die, but I want to feel like myself in death than staying alive and feeling like someone else, which, you know, you could argue is, I guess, commendable or whatever. But unfortunately, the brain injury sort of overwhelmed him regardless. I think the cancer fucked up the brain more than treatment for the cancer would have. It became a very, very dark, bad situation. And so I, you know, have traveled a lot back and forth to Rhode Island, certainly in the last year. In March of 2020, we were told that his cancer had become terminal. And if you were living out of state, finding out that your parent has a terminal illness, and you're thinking, gosh, I'd like to spend more time with them, the worst possible time to be given that information, aside from truly any time, is right at the start of a global pandemic. So that kicked off a wild fucking ride of trying to figure out how to support and like see my father when he had been, in March of 2020, given a year to live. He, you know, we love to set and exceed goals. He survived, obviously, for far longer than a year. But then in, I don't even remember which year, it became, okay, for real, this is the countdown. And then even this past year in May, he had been given weeks. But he really kept trucking along, although was deeply, deeply unhappy because the car accident had aged him at least a decade, which he was the first to say. And the brain injury really was devastating because it just, if you have any experience with someone who has a traumatic brain injury, you may be nodding your head. It just was, there's no way to put it. You know, the thing with him dying is that it's kind of like opened the door to grieving the loss of him before he died. And also, this became sort of an excruciating experience, more so certainly for my mom and brother who lived with him than for me, just slowly dying from within back in New York. But, you know, to talk to your parent, and whenever we spoke, he would talk about wanting to essentially be put out of his misery and not being able to counter that with like, well, I'd like you here, which felt and still feels incredibly selfish. It's just been very difficult. And, you know, I got a call last, I don't even remember like where I am, but the Friday before Thanksgiving, I was hopping on a Zoom with a friend of the pod, Kiki Monique, the Talk of Shame, and 10 or 15 minutes before that Zoom, got a call from my mom, and she said, we've reached the finish line here, you should come back. And so I hopped on the Zoom, and thank God, you know, Kiki is such a wonderful person, and I consider her a really good friend, because I just started crying, and she knew the situation. I'd reached out to people back in the spring when we were told he had been given weeks and said, you know, to a couple podcast friends and said, any interest in doing me a solid and recording a an episode of the pod so that when I need to take a little time off, I'll be able to the joys of self-employment in a podcast that I alone host. And I'm very, very thankful that some podcasters rallied and have sent me some stuff, which you guys will be hearing over the next couple episodes. But thanks to, you know, it was also an interesting process knowing that I would need to take time off because I knew I needed to take time off. Then I started having like these weird GI symptoms over the summer that couldn't be figured out, including while I was visiting home and not feeling well. And then had pneumonia and then the mass situation. And, you know, the very first meeting with my surgeon, I didn't even know I was going to be having surgery, but I was like, you should know that my dad is currently dying and this timing is really bad. And we didn't want to tell him about what was going on because he was already dealing with so much. So, you know, we just said that the pneumonia was going, and that's why I hadn't been home, because I'd been home really
very consistently to visit. And then finally, my mom called and was like, you need to tell him that you're going to be having surgery, because he's like asking questions, doesn't understand the pneumonia of it all, which honestly, kudos to him, because we thought he would just kind of stick to the pneumonia narrative. And so having that call with my dad was really tough, because I didn't know if he would be, he could have honestly gone at any time. So I just was so mad at myself for having to like deal with this. And also from a podcast perspective, needing to, because of like medical issues, however sort of small or whatever, is certainly in comparison, taking time away for the pneumonia, which was unexpected, and then time away for the surgery, which was unexpected, and also knowing that at a certain point I would need time away to deal with the death of my dad was like wild. But I do think, sort of as a Easter egg of despair, if you listen to the first 10 seconds of the episode with Kiki, who was an angel and a queen, and like it just really like rallied, because I had just gotten the word that I like needed to come back, and it was like final moments, days or whatever, and then hopped on a Zoom with her. You can only imagine the energy I was bringing to the table. And if you listen to the first, I think, minute of that episode, you can tell I'm just trying to like keep it together. I went home the next day and we were told hours to days, but my father continuing to break records lasted, although he wasn't conscious when I was home. He had been in hospice care for the last 18 months, but really when it ended, it was a total plummet. He had had these moments where they thought it was the end and he would just kind of like come back to some element of life, but he had plenty of time to think about his death and really wanted to be in control of it. And the people in hospice were like so wonderful, but it was devastating to see my father, who I think understood, like when my mom would communicate things to him, I don't think ever opened his eyes again, but I think like even in the first day or so, even though he never was able to communicate, I think he like understood things. This is going terribly. I'm so sorry. So he outlasted even hospices, you know, hours to days and then hours, and then it's going to be 12 hours to 24 hours. And he sort of laid there slowly, excruciatingly dying, which was the thing he really didn't want. He didn't want to die in this way. And it was unbelievably painful to not feel like I could help him. It felt like his wishes were not being met by God. But he was able to die at home. So there's something there. And his best friend is our family, Shishi Poo Chester, who's also 16 and a half. And my dad kept saying that dog essentially better not die before me, because they really, really loved each other and would sleep together every night. And so, you know, we had Chester on the bed with him at points and played his favorite music and Ella Fitzgerald and the Carpenters and West Side Story, original Broadway cast. Although there were moments where my mom's like, this is too spirited for the energy. And one night I read, you know, 50 or 60 pages from For Whom the Bell Tolls, his favorite book, and talk to him. And even though he couldn't respond, it did feel somewhat healing, is what I'm going to keep telling myself. And, you know, every night I would go to sleep at night, I just wish that he would be put out of his misery. I knew this is not how he wanted to go. And in the final days, it seemed like he was as comfortable as he could possibly be. My mom slept next to him every night. They were married for 55 years. They got married and essentially right out of college, shout out Vietnam, and waited 100 years to have kids, which honestly, God bless them. So she slept next to him every night and gave him medication every hour and tracked everything and, you know, was the kind of caregiver that I think anyone would hope for. While saying over and over again, why am I so tired? And I would say, Toby, it's because your husband is dying and you're not sleeping or eating and such. But anyway, so I would just like hope every night that he would be able to rest. And I think I've seen too many TV shows or movies or stuff about dying, because you hear these stories of people who are like, and then I told my so-and-so, you know, it's okay to go. And then right after they passed. So I was like, God, I don't really want to like take that, you know, golden ticket out and tell him it's okay to go, because then he really will immediately. But then it came to a point where I was like, he's just, it feels like he's no longer here. And this feels like, you know, suffering for what is left of his soul. So I did at one point whisper to him and say, like, you know, I would stroke his hair and said, you know, Dad, it's okay to go. And I went to sleep that night. And before I went to sleep, I was like, this is it. This is when he's going. This is, you know, because he's outlasted even the 12 to 24 hours, you know, a week or whatever went by. And heard what sounded like crows outside my bedroom window. And I was like, oh my God, it happened. It was the middle of the night and like early in the morning, and like thinking about the fucking crows and the birds. I'm like, oh my God, it's my father in the trees. And like, these are all the signs that I've heard. And I heard my mom go up the stairs. And if she's going up the stairs, that definitely means he's dead, because she's like by his side 24/7. And I just took a deep breath and I went into the hallway and saw my mother and I looked at her and she looked at me and said, oh, he's still here. And I was so confused that I quite literally said, but what about the birds? Because I was so convinced that my father, even though Edgar Allan Poe is less of a fave than Hemingway was, I was so convinced that my father had become a crow that I was like, no, I think you're wrong, ma'am, because what about the sounds of the birds? So then, you know, a couple days went by, and then one morning, Sunday morning, she walked upstairs and came into my room and said, you know, he's no longer here. And I had told her and my brother emphatically, I did not want to see him after he passed, because I got to tell you what, I'm a Jew. We don't fuck with wakes, but my dad's side of the family is Italian Catholic. So I've seen my grandparents at wakes, and that scared the absolute fucking shit out of me. So I am not like into, not that anyone really could be unless you want a really extensive Wikipedia page, but I am not here for like bodies after rest in peace. But so I had said that over and over again. I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. But then there was just something in me that was like, just sit with your father. So I just immediately went downstairs and sat with him. And, you know, I don't even know what I said. It was not a great day. You know, if I'm waiting for someone to say, how was your Thanksgiving? So I can say it was like pretty bad. I don't know why that brings me joy. I think my dad would find joy in that, though, honestly. So, you know, I haven't watched Housewives this week while sitting next to the body of my then dying father. But there's a part of me, even though I have these like incredible episodes from podcaster friends, it's like I actually do want to watch stuff. But my nightmare is doing exactly what's happening now. I don't think this is, not that it needs to be like interesting or entertaining, although the former I always appreciate. I don't like this. I think that this podcast can serve as an escape. And there have been a couple times when I have gotten on and just been really upset and needed to vent, and for whatever reason, or share maybe, this makes me more uncomfortable than maybe any episode I've recorded in the 600 something episodes that I've done. And, you know, I've had friends who've lost people and have written like incredible pieces and posts. And I just wish that I had that kind of temperament or something. My dad was like very careful with and precise with words, and you can tell in his writing. And I encourage you to read his books. The first one about the first 10 days after my brother's diving accident. The second is really the book that he holds the closest, the name of which is Hearts and Minds. It also went by REMFs and Of Rice and Men, which is a novel based on his experiences in Vietnam. And the third is a sort of crime novel called Millie's Lament, a sort of crime thriller called Millie's Lament. But the second is the one that he would really want you to read. So, you know, I don't know. It's like air in the spare. I only have one now? Like, what the fuck? It is sort of a weird experience. And, you know, there are people I really respect and appreciate, like Heather McMahon, who talks a lot about being in the, you know, dead dad club. And fuck me, like, I don't want to be in that at all. I want to hear and learn from her experiences, but I don't really think I identify with that right now. But I'm also like days out. And it's been tough. It's like, you know, hearing from people and then not hearing from people. It's that's also one of those weird traumas of like, I've had a strange year. And so people who were very close and important parts of my life just sort of dropped off since last fall. And so kind of having to carry that and deal with the like, ooh, you just showed me your colors and I don't love them. And also not have people who I, you know, loved and until that point respected, like not having that support system when they, you know, knew also that my dad was dying has been a very complicated experience. But also I've had so many incredible people who've stepped up and have been checking in, and I'm back in New York. I came back just for a couple of days to breathe before I go to a, where I call it a fake Shiva. We're not like doing a Shiva Shiva because my mom just has her hands full. But we're, so my brother and I were like, whatever the fuck you want to do. So we're fully behind you. So we're going to have just, I think, some like loved ones over this weekend. So I'll go back to Rhode Island for that. And what does that mean for the podcast? I don't, you know, I don't think that I'm not, I obviously was not the person who was like, this feels like appropriate content while it was happening. I would never use my parents' health matters as content or, God forbid, like a shield. If you had an issue with something I was saying, I didn't want to be like, oh, and by the way, you know, I fuck up like everyone else in this world. And I want to be honest to myself and transparent to myself in keeping some things private. But now he's dead. So you're going to have to know where these tears are coming from. And I don't know. It's like a complicated situation. I wrote a little bit about it before he died, and thank God showed two friends who were like, ooh, interesting. So that'll stay between me and the paper, also known as keyboard of my computer. And hopefully I will write something. My father would want me to write. And speaking of writing, he wrote his obituary. He called it a sayonara letter. I was so fortunate. I had a couple opportunities to record with him. I asked him to write me letters because you hear those fucking like Instagram reels of like, I'm getting married and my now dead whomever wrote me a letter to read on that day, which I thought was like so fucking wonderful. And I asked my dad to do that and he said no. Then I asked my dad if he would record a podcast with me for me and he said no. So then I was like, cool, cool, cool. How about if I record a podcast for other people? Will you join me then? And he said, absolutely. So we recorded an episode that maybe I'll post at some point. But it was the, you know, thanks to the podcast being like, I have recording equipment. It'll feel so exciting. And it was. He was excited by it. But during, we did that twice, but during the podcast recording, he talked about the fact that he had written a sayonara letter that he didn't let myself or mom or brother see, but he mentioned it several times and had been dying for, what, March of 2020? How does math work? 4.5 years, whatever? Pretend that works. So I had heard about this thing, but hadn't read it, although I stumbled into it while searching for things that I might find interesting in his office, like childhood letters and stuff that I could not find. But I found his sayonara letter, which I read over the summer and was like, wow. And then blocked it from my mind. But after he died, I went upstairs and typed it for the funeral home, and it was the thing that he wanted left as his legacy. And I just think it's really beautiful. I'm so sorry I'm crying. I mean, I do have a pretty good excuse because my father is quite literally deceased, but I want to read it. Because the thing with my dad is he had such an incredible, important, pointed, funny, smart voice. He was incredible at everything. He was like genius levels. My brother, as everyone has agreed and acknowledged, is alive because my father built and created, invented wheelchairs that didn't exist. He was like an engineer. He would create computers. He was like an engineer plus plus. He obviously, because I've mentioned this, went to law school and was like an eviscerating civil litigator. My mom said she's the one that recommended he go to law school because he just liked arguing so much. And so he put that to good use as a lawyer, but he would certainly want to be identified first and foremost as a writer. And his writing was beautiful and specific and spare and wonderful. And so he wrote this sayonara letter, which is up on the website of the funeral that's like hosting his obit or whatever. Shout out to them. But I wanted to share it because he had so many important, interesting things to say and just had a very, very, very small group of people to share them. He did not want people to see him toward the end, but was also a pretty isolated guy throughout his life. And so my hope is that for the 10 or 15 people listening to this episode, that's honestly 10 or 15 more than maybe we'll have an opportunity to discover this. I'm also sharing it on my Instagram as a post. And if you are interested in reading and sharing it there, you know, like the Mariah memoir where you listen to the audio while you read the actual book itself. My father, the Mariah Carey of embedded journalists. If you have an opportunity or interest to share it, I would really appreciate it because if, you know, I just think if people can find and listen to his voice after he passed, like there would be no better or greater legacy that he would appreciate than that. And also Google's books. I don't even know how you buy them. I don't know. Contact our publishers. I don't know. Amazon. But those are pretty great too. Okay. So anyway, this is Richard Galley's Sayonara letter. And it starts, "My Sayonara. In ancient societies, when an important man died, people sacrificed some of his soldiers and his women to protect him and do his laundry in the afterlife. A while ago, my wife Toby and I had a talk along those lines. If I died, would Toby sacrifice our dog Chester to comfort me in the afterlife? Absolutely not, she said. Well, how about the reverse? If Chester died, would Toby sacrifice me so Chester had someone to play with in the afterlife? Toby said she would think about it. It's nice to know that Toby will keep Chester safe and happy. It's nice to have confidence that the good things in life will continue to be good even after I'm not there to experience them." He'd be so mad that I'm crying. I'm telling you, he'd be like, "You're fucking up my writing." Okay. "Some people will be surprised by my death, and some will mourn it. But to complicate their thinking, as I usually do, I have to say that I might have begun wilting several years ago. Even before my secret cancer started blossoming and a roadway accident gave me a traumatic brain injury. A routine aging process might have been withering me before the crash and the cancer teamed up to cancel me. Overall, things have not been terrible. I laugh much more than I did before. In some ways, I think my medical conditions have introduced me to a new, rollicking, unanticipated state of being, as good as bad can get. Why now? Publishing this premature obituary might seem to be a strange thing for me to do, but I am one of the best available sources of useful data about me. And information is quickly becoming unavailable, even to me as my memory erodes. I have been freshening this Sayonara letter many times for years, and it has become smaller with every major addition. It is amazing how the abbreviated story of a person's life can become quicker to tell as the years of living it accumulate. Also, just wanted to say P.S. This was my voice when I was reading Hemingway to him. And at one point, I like cut in the middle of reading to my father as he lay dying and was like, I don't think I like this book. And then continued. Okay, so anyway, continuing on. Considering the effects of aging plus cancer and brain damage, I don't know how long I might persist as a reliable reporter of who I was and what you ought to know that I might want to tell you. So I will succumb to my situation and declare that this is the final draft of my Sayonara letter, and I won't write or publish another edition unless someone develops simultaneous cures for traumatic brain damage, cancer, and getting old. Who I hoped to be. I leave truly appreciating that I have been a fortunate guy. I have had much more good luck than bad luck. Confronting the occasional hardships in my family's life has not been difficult compared to the challenges faced by many others. Our situation overall has always been good compared to what millions of people on earth have to endure. I met with, worked with, and sometimes spoke in their language with many of those desperately struggling people in Vietnam and Iraq, and I don't have to take someone's word about how hard life can be for people who cope with genuine bad luck. Much of the world would even now trade places with me, terminal cancer included. My life will achieve a shorter span of time than some people might wish for themselves, but the years were plenty enough for me. They were packed with a variety of things that kept me busy, learning and doing and experiencing stuff that normal people around me did not regard as highly as I did. The most rewarding places I have visited and the most satisfying things I have done are the sort of untidy and intimidating places and things that most smart folks would pay good money to avoid. I can't persuade you to envy or appreciate what I consider to be the best parts of my story. If someday there is a gathering to help folks achieve group closure, to acknowledge my transition and get past it, maybe this note will be read there, and soon after get published to wide acclaim in the New Yorker, of course. More likely, it will be passed around within a very small set of busy acquaintances who won't quickly remember where they put it. At this point, custom might insist that I help define my own legacy, by reminding people of legends that might or might not be factual. I prepared a list of my defining interests and accomplishments, but then I deleted the list. People who knew me well won't need the list, and people who didn't know me well won't understand the list. If people are not satisfied that they knew me well and want to crack my code, they should read the most revealing thing I leave behind, a book that started in 1971 as Rempf's, and then became Of Rice and Men in 2006, and then morphed into Hearts and Minds in 2017. It turns out that with the exception of my family, in my life I was devoted to that book more than to anything else. As a commercial property, it has faults that I recognize, but as a personal testament, it is perfect. In my life, the prize I wanted most of all was to become the kind of person who would write that kind of book. I would have won that prize if, after finishing the book, I had been the only one who ever read it. The Guiding Light. When I was a young man, Ernest Hemingway's novel, For Whom the Bell Tolls, set for me a standard for comportment that I have tried to live by ever since. The melancholy protagonist is a man who dies on a mission that he could have avoided, in a battle that he knows is already lost. At the end of the book, Robert Jordan has been wounded, and he is trying to hold himself together for a little while so he can slow down the enemy soldiers who are pursuing his friends. Barely able to move, his consciousness waning, he prepares for another losing fight. Because his life still has some utility, he will do what he is able to do until he can't do that anymore. Scattered about the last few pages of the book are these thoughts of a man whose capabilities have been shattered. Each one does what he can. There are many worse things than this. Everyone has to do this one day or another. You are not afraid of it once you know you have to do it, are you? I hate to leave, is all. I hate to leave it very much, and I hope I have done some good in it. I've tried to with what talent I had. The world is a fine place and worth the fighting for, and I hate very much to leave. You do not want to complain when you have been so lucky. Best wishes, Richard. He would hate that there wasn't a new episode up on Tuesday. I would have been yelled at. So anyway, how was your holiday? As mentioned, there will be new episodes of AG, incredible episodes of AG, with some guest co-hosts. I am interested in watching Beverly Hills, seeing whatever the fuck is going on with Kyle. But just bear with me, because truly, I'm giving myself this as an episode to like cry and whatever. But that's not my personality. That's not what I will be doing with episodes moving forward. I might not, you know, acknowledge my day before I record, but so I think you will probably get a mishmash of stuff in the upcoming apps. But upside, new content. And so anyway, happy belated Thanksgiving. I could share that story, but I think I need to have therapy tomorrow prior. I don't really know what else to say. I mean, there's really nothing that can be said aside from my father's words and wishes, which is hopefully that you read that. And I'll include, I guess, a link to the obit. I'll also be sharing it on my Instagram when this episode goes up. And thanks for listening. I'm so sorry it was a little bit of a downer, but you know, I quite literally lost a parent. And I don't know. I said over and over again on episodes that like 2024 was the worst year on earth. And I knew at that point my father was dying. I didn't know when, but now that it's happened, I can in fact say with confidence that 2024 has in fact been the worst year of my life. And you know, I guess there are some words of wisdom I can think of, but I can hear neighbors screaming currently. I guess there's parties or whatever, because, you know, again, holiday season. So I feel like I should be, you know, using my energies more to prepare a go fuck yourself with passion. So there's that. Thanks for hanging out on this episode to whomever made it to the end. And I don't know. I wish I had something beautiful and poetic to say. That hasn't sort of been the experience that my family has had in these last couple years and also decades. And so there we are. My dad was a complicated man, and we had a complicated relationship. And there's a lot that I'm grateful for. And I'll miss so many parts of him. I really will. And I guess there's no better legacy than that. I mean, I'm sure there are other legacies, Gandhi and whomever, obviously Shannon Bador. But I think to be missed is a beautiful gift, to be wanted as well. So there we are. Thanks for listening to this 3-minute episode, obviously, if anybody asks. And I will most certainly chat with you soon. So this episode for my dad. All right. Join the Patreon. I just made myself laugh genuinely. All right. Chat with you soon.